Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. I'm Chad Young. Pete Ball back with me. You missed the last episode, episode 120, when we talked about inflation, had a whole inflation episode. Are you glad you missed that? Sad?
I mean, if we're talking about the United States economy's inflation, then yes, I'm glad I missed that. But no, I'm always down for some good new inflation talk. It's hit my teams pretty hard. So yeah, sad I missed it.
Yeah, we got into a little bit of inflation in draft leagues because it's, you know, we talk about a lot in auction leagues, but it matters in drafts too. And just sort of a quick note, but we are now deep into things in our Listener League 2. Lots of trades going on. And I was messing around with trying to predict what guys would be kept and therefore what the draft cost would be on players, basically trying to measure inflation. So I took NFBC ADP. I went through the first 63 names on there and made a prediction of whether they'd be kept or not. Out of that 63 names, I had 32 that I thought would be kept, which means that the 63rd player off the board at NFBC right now, who's Jazz Chisholm Jr., who I do not expect to be kept in our league, will be the 31st, roughly, player off the board instead of the 63rd, which is a huge difference, mm-hmm. to the point that I have him for a fourth-round keeper cost. And that's enough to flip him from not being a keep, because he's a sixth-round pick, and why would you waste a fourth keeping a guy you get in the sixth, to being a guy you have to pay an early to mid-third-round pick for, and maybe giving up a fourth is worth it. So I was sort of blown away by what a big difference it made to someone that early in the draft. There's a few other guys I mentioned in our league chat that I have two guys that I have second round costs on, Luis Castillo and Pete Alonso, who don't necessarily look like second round picks right now, but they're going to go in the top 20, I think, in this draft because of all the keepers. And so if you have a late second round pick, they get really interesting all of a sudden. So it is something that go back and listen to that episode if you haven't, even though Pete wasn't there. It's a good reminder that, you know, when there are keepers, costs go up for everyone else. So yeah, you should go check that out. Meanwhile, Pete, we are now at episode, what is this, 121? Yeah, 121. So we need to talk jersey numbers.
Yes, we do.
And jersey number 21 is there's some famous 21s out there. The guy who immediately comes to mind for me might be different than the one who comes to mind for you. But Clemente, to me, is the obvious 21. But Boston had a 21 throwing a lot of really, really good innings for them in the 80s and 90s. Who may come to mind first for you?
Yeah, who's a pretty good commentator too, Roger Clemens there. So sure, I mean, a little bit before my, you know, viewing time is Clemens for me. I thought you were going to say that the one that comes to mind, not Clemente, would be Sammy Sosa, but Clemens, you know, he's at the top there in that WAR leaderboard by a substantial margin. He didn't wear 21 with the Yankees, or the Astros, it looks like, but he did wear it with the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. So totally fair. Spahn, obviously Warren Spahn, wearing it for 20 years. Maybe this is the Warren Spahn / Roberto Clemente episode.
20 years is a long time to wear the same number. So
yeah, it is.
Man, he pitched all the way into the mid 60s. I don't think I realized that. Crazy.
I wonder what he looked like in 65.
Go look at some pictures. The only year is with the Giants.
I'm doing it right now.
Go find a photo. Warren Spahn with the San Francisco Giants.
Dude, oh my God. Look up Warren Spahn, 1965. That guy was a pitcher in the major leagues. I want to be clear. I'm not making fun of him. He's a freaking Hall of Fame baseball player. Yeah. But like, wow, they aged differently in the 60s and 50s.
Yeah, goodness. He looks like a manager. He would be an, he looks like he'd be an old manager today, right?
Yeah, he'd be a mentor to Alex Cora.
Yeah, goodness. Well, he managed to make it work, so good for him.
Yeah, he did.
But with that, we've been a couple weeks away. It's been sort of a weird offseason. We've been on and off. We're here this week. We'll be here again next week. We are recording this on Thursday, December 21st. You should be hearing it on Saturday, the 23rd. Perfect listening for your Christmas travel, if you've got Christmas travel coming up. And we're going to talk about a mock auction that Pete and I both participated in. It was set up by some of the longtime AutoNew players on the AutoNew Slack community. Pete and I did it. Let's see who else. Lucas Kelly, who writes with me at Fangraphs, did it. And then everyone else in there are basically just people who've been playing AutoNew for, mostly been playing for a long time. There were a couple of relatively new players, which added a nice, I think, mix to it. Every year, I do a exceedingly long tweet thread of all the picks in a mock draft, all the picks in a mock auction. To just gives me a chance to think about every player and put some news out there. So I did that. So you go check out my Twitter feed at Chad Young and see what that looks like. And yeah, we're going to go and take a look at not just some players who are taken, what they cost, but also dive into some trends we noticed, some things we saw happening in this draft that might be worth keeping in mind as you get ready for your keeper decision, some offseason trades, and of course, auctions coming up in a couple months. So, Pete, with that, anything that jumped out at you? Any players you were really surprised by? Any positions that you were thrown by? Anything that really stood out?
Thrown? I don't know if that's the word I'd use. I went into this with a specific strategy, Chad, where, like, you know, I've done enough of these now over the last 3 years since we started the show where I just wanted to see how the cards kind of fell. And so I really targeted starting pitcher and I really targeted outfield. And I think I would have been thrilled with the build if I had spent another $46. I left the auction with $46. If you, you know, flip Jonathan India with like Jose Altuve or something on my roster, I'd be pretty excited about it. But in terms of specific players, you know, what stood out, what didn't, I can't really say there was one or something player that was like, wow, that guy went for too much, that guy went for too little, that is so egregious. I think it was a pretty well evened auction.
Yeah, I generally agree. I think it wasn't too crazy at any individual player. I did have a few players I thought were surprising values and surprisingly high cost. Looking at your roster, I mean, I think, you know, Corbin Carroll, I know we talked about this on Twitter a bit. Your $46 on Carroll felt steep to me. Guys who have these great rookie years, I think we have a tendency to be like, that's it. That's the floor. That's who they are. It's only going to get better from here. I'll actually, as long as we're in here, let me pull up my tweet about him because I can share the numbers I put in that tweet. So here's what I said. Since 2017, there have been 11 rookies, not counting the 23 season. So not counting Carroll, as well as, by the way, there are two other rookies who made this group, one of whom is Nolan Jones, the other is Matt McClain. But not counting those three. Since 2017, 11 rookies have had a 370-plus WOBA in 300-plus plate appearances in that rookie season. Seven of them saw at least a 30-point drop in their WOBA as sophomores. Two more had at least a 15-point drop in WOBA. One had a .006 drop, but he also missed a lot of time because of injury. The only guy who didn't see that kind of drop is Juan Soto. And Pete, you replied, let's see if I can find, doesn't want to show me your reply. You replied that he wasn't as cheap as you thought, but you were confident he is better than whoever those guys were. So I'm going to read to you who those guys were. I tweeted this back to you, but I'll read it to you now. Those guys who all had that drop-off, Yordan Alvarez, Aaron Judge, Fernando Tatis, Soto, who I mentioned didn't have that drop-off, Shohei Ohtani, Keston Hiura, Ronald Acuna Jr., Pete Alonso, Cody Bellinger, Jose Martinez, and Brian Reynolds. Now, Jose Martinez and Keston Hiura don't belong in this list, clearly. Like, those guys are very clear. Like, yeah, okay, they weren't what we, you know, what we hoped. And I think with both of those guys, there was a pretty good sense when they were rookies, you weren't like, these guys are MVP candidates moving forward, right? On the other hand, Alvarez, Judge, Tatis, Ohtani, Acuna, Pete Alonso, Bellinger, even Brian Reynolds were guys that it was easier to be like, okay, this guy is a star, right? We were thinking about them the same way we're thinking about Carroll. And other than Soto, they all had pretty significant drop-offs as sophomores. So that doesn't mean Carroll is definitely going to do that, but I do think people should be cautious about overspending on Carroll just because, like, oh my God, he was such a star as a rookie. Where's the future going to be? It's probably going to be down, is my guess.
Yeah, so I have a hard time with that. Like, I don't think I with such a small sampling of players, you know, how many players was that you rattled off there?
11.
Like, I don't see. I'm trying to look at Carroll's game and be like, yeah, you know what? He's gonna do the same thing. He's gonna have that sophomore slump or whatever it is. It feels like a little too like, just because this happened, this must happen now. I wonder how many of those, if we were really dive into each of those situations, how many of those related to injury? How many of those are just related to like that player performed way above his head his rookie season? To me, I look at Corbin Carroll and I think, okay, I got him for $46. That's what the auction calculator, I believe, has him at if I'm reading this correctly. So fine. I factor in outfield sucks and I wanted to get an elite outfielder. Corbin Carroll is definitely, you know, like a top five outfielder, whatever it might be. And I'm trying to look at the player and what I expect him to do going forward. Not even looking at what other players have done in their second seasons in other years. Like, one of the reasons why Corbin Carroll was so amazing last season, undoubtedly, is because of the shift in stolen base rules. And he's a base stealer. Like, that's just a part of his game that's different than those other guys in those other situations. And that's just one component of it. You know, like, yeah, we can laugh. You're like, no, he's definitely not better than a lot of those names that you listed, but I don't see why he couldn't be. This is a number one overall prospect that was in the MVP conversation, took his team to the World Series and won Rookie of the Year. So, I'm all in on Corbin Carroll. I'm fine with the $46. If I was able to get him at 40, yeah, I would have been happier. But with outfielders, I was going to be pushing the envelope, and I was actually a little surprised I only ended up with one of these extreme top tier outfielders given my approach. Honestly, I should have ended up with at least one more given how much money I had left over.
Yeah. We can talk a little bit more about the money left over, because I ran into the same thing. I left $60 on the table. I honestly, like, I just did a poor job planning. I got going in this thing. And I just got busy, and so I never really like made a plan, and that's what happened. But outfield in general, I felt like it drops off. I was surprised how quickly it felt like it dropped off. Let's put it that way. And it's like, I'm looking at, like, you know, there's a handful of outfielders who went for like $60. Yordan Alvarez was 59. Soto was up around that price, 60. Mike Trout went for 45, despite all the issues we've seen with him. Julio Rodriguez went for 47. But then it felt like after that, it was like, oh, everybody's got question marks. And I think it's going to change the way I'm thinking about outfield in all of my leagues this year, because it just, I think outfield's kind of down more than I realized. It's way more than I realized.
We were just talking about that. So I just recorded with Nick Pollock. I have no idea when the episode is going to air. It might not. It probably won't air until after this one. Definitely won't. But one of the things we talked about was outfield and how it looks. And I took Brian Reynolds, and I want to say it was the sixth round, which like feels a little aggressive. I like Brian Reynolds a lot. Granted, this auction was for Fangraph points, and the mock that I'm now talking about with Nick, that's a head-to-head categories league, so it's very different. But Brian Reynolds is a five-category contributor, and I like him. So sixth round, fine. The next outfielder, like, that's the end of a tier. The next outfielder was Nick Castellanos, not until the ninth round. And only one outfielder went that round. It was Castellanos. And then three went in the 10th. So there is this precipitous drop-off that is definitely compounded in this format, where a guy like Michael Harris, who I also got, is maybe not as valuable as he is in a league where those stolen bases count for more. So the pool of elite outfielders and even very good outfielders is a little bit smaller in Fangraph's points. So it's a bad position. It just is. It's never been this bad, at least in the time I've been playing.
So are you going to be more aggressive about keeping and drafting outfielders? Like, I mean, it's not the same in honor new, obviously, as in a draft, but when you're looking at that drop off after the sixth round, like, do you feel like you need to leave the first six rounds with two outfielders?
Minimum. I do. It gets ugly. I mean, I intentionally targeted outfield hard in this auction. And I end up, my first four outfielders are Corbin Carroll, Christian Yelich, Michael Harris, and Jordan Walker. I feel pretty good about that, even though Walker wasn't that great last year. I still ended up having to take Chris Bryant as my fifth outfielder.
Yeah.
And when you get to my bench, like, who am I going to replace him with? Tyler O'Neill, Sedan Rafaela? Like, I targeted the position and still ended up with a little bit of a hole there. So that could just be error on my part. Like I said twice already, I left $46 on the table. But yes, to answer your question, I am prioritizing outfield in my keeper decisions, in my auction decisions, because it just at this point in time doesn't look great. Chad, we said the same thing last year about third base. Everybody did. Third base ended up being great. So is it going to be the case? I don't know. But in draft season, we only have so much to go on, and what we have to go on would suggest outfield is thin and drops off precipitously.
So let's talk about a different position real quick, where I'm, you know, it's still sort of thin at the top, but I've now done the same mock that you talked to Nick about. I was in that draft with you, and then did this, and in both of them I have felt like I could just wait forever at catcher.
Yeah, crazy.
And it's just like I just waited and waited and waited. I ended up with a $5 Keibert Ruiz and a $5 Gabriel Moreno. I am very confident that at least one of those guys is going to be a very good catcher for me next year. The other one will 100%. Probably fill in fine as my number two. And it just felt like you had those two going at that price. Cal Raleigh was $5. Salvador Perez was $6. I don't even really like Salvador Perez. Sean Murphy was $5. Yadier Diaz was $7. Francisco Alvarez was $8. Wilson Contreras was $5. You have that top tier, right? Adley Rutschman went for $19. JT Realmuto only went for $11. Jonah Heim was $1. William Contreras only went for $12, and he really belongs in that top tier, I think, at this point. So, like, it just feels like, maybe it was just this draft, but I'm looking at the like $1 to $6 range at catcher, and I'm like, there are like 15 guys in that range that I think I'm okay with. And so I am I'm sort of just happy to sit back and let other people take catchers.
Yeah, that was my mindset as well. And I was just bidding up William Contreras, and he was the number one catcher last season in most formats. And it got to $12, and I'm like, all right, there's no way I'm going to get William Contreras, but I'll bid him up at least this high. And I ended up with a $12 William Contreras. So even that, I was pretty happy with, although I don't know how I feel about sinking that money into the position, given the circumstances. You know what I think it is there's, in recent history, and really since I started playing, there's always been one or two catchers that were like elite, right? Like JT Realmuto in his heyday was like, you know, that could be a 25-20 catcher, and like that's a guy you can target as early as the second round in recent history. The position is deep, but there's not a lot at the top. And so I think we end up with this like smorgasbord of like perfectly fine catchers that we all feel comfortable with and could all end up with very, very similar stat lines at the end of the season. And they're all just kind of lumped together, not in the middle of the position, but at the top of the position. And so why am I going to prioritize it if there's still plenty of options that I like later in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, look at this one. Adley went for 19. Will Smith went for 16. I believe Contreras was next at 12, and Realmuto was 11. And that was it for double figures.
Yeah.
So
I think those four managers would probably prefer to go back in time and end up with a Bo Naylor or a Gabriel Moreno instead.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel that way about a $19 Adley Rutschman. I think he might be a tier to himself.
I agree with. He's definitely a top catcher for me.
Yeah, but I could totally see being like, yeah, I don't know. $16 Smith, I'm okay with all those prices. The one I'd actually be most concerned about is Realmuto, only because I feel like he's getting to that like catchers just disappear at some point age, and he's pushing that. So
definitely,
yeah, but I'm just like, there are so many good cheap catchers that I'm just like, eh. Like, you look at the team, the co-managers who set up this auction, the Sabercats team, and we can put the link to this auction in the show notes so that everybody can check out the results, but They ended up with Danny Jansen and Elias Diaz for $1 each as their catcher pair. Now, Diaz, you can really only use at Coors. Jansen will probably miss half a season. That's still probably 140 games between those two of really strong catcher performance. So probably. It just feels like a spot where you could just wait. Take your time and wait, because
especially in this where there's 40 roster spots, so that's fine. If like I in a 12-10, your standard 12-team league, right? I'm not going to devote two roster spots to catcher. But when you get 40, like, sure, yeah, let's do it. Let's do a Jansen-Diaz hybrid and go from there.
So, Pete, we have a new sponsor on the show, actually a sponsor for the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And this is actually a company that I've used before, so I'm excited to talk about them because I think they do some really good stuff. And, you know, during the holiday season, they are particularly fitting. You know, you're busy, but you're still looking for like a nutritious, flavorful meal to fuel you on these jam-packed days. And Factor is America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. Can help you eat well for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. Save time, stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling your holiday to-dos. If you're looking for like calorie-conscious options over the holidays that don't skip on flavor, you can try their delicious dietitian-approved calorie-smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving. Need an extra boost to support your wellness goals? Feel your best during the holidays? You can try their protein plus meals with 30 grams of protein or more per serving. Honestly, when I used Factor, and I'm not using it now, I have to admit, but I used it for a long time. When I did, it was because I was doing keto and I was able to get keto meals from them that really helped me maintain a keto lifestyle for a while that kept me healthy and fit. I really loved it. So head to factormeals.com. That's factormeals.com/K or K. Keep or cut. K or K50. Factormeals.com/K or K50. And use the code K or K50 to get 50% off. That's code K or K50 at factormeals.com/K or K to get 50% off your first order. And yeah, I mean, Pete, I don't know if you've ever had anything from Factor before, but I have. It's good stuff. It really does just take 2 minutes in the microwave to heat up, and then you can go have a good lunch, good dinner. Highly recommended. Go check it out. I may have to order some more, actually, because I'm out. So,
well, hey, microwave is my most used cooking device in the kitchen, so this is right up my alley. Yeah,
and they're good. They're good meals. So, but anyways, we can get back into this auction. We talked a little bit about outfield. We talked a little bit about catcher. We also talked about the fact that you and I both left a lot of money on the table. You left a lot of money on the table despite paying up for Corbin Carroll. I left a lot of money on the table despite spending $57 on a utility player. He is a good one. What do you think about that price on Shohei Ohtani? And does any of the news about him, his contract, all that, change your thinking? Because he was not a Dodger when I signed him.
Yeah, I think going to the Dodgers is obviously great for his value. You know, I'm not going to push back on that. I don't know how much better he can get, to be honest with you, but we're about to find out. I think what's exciting about a $57 value is that even though it's so expensive, you're still going to be keeping him next year, which means you're going to get a chance to see what is it going to be like when he's pitching again. Because when he is pitching in this particular format, I mean, he's like a $70, $80 player. So you'll have a shot at getting value. Not only this season, if he hits like a $60 hitter, which maybe he does, but you have a ton of potential value going forward. So regardless of the destination, and it was a good destination, I like the price on Ohtani.
Yeah, and he is sitting in that same price range just below guys like Yordan Alvarez, Mookie Betts, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, and that makes sense. He should be a little cheaper than them. He's the same tier of bat, but he's util only. But yeah, like you said, the future value of him once he's back on the mound is really interesting. I do think once you account for all of the deferrals and crazy deferrals in this contract, it comes out to like a $46 million per year AAV, something like that is what the accountants are telling me. And it does give me a little pause of wondering, are the Dodgers not convinced he's going to pitch? Or at least not convinced he's going to pitch much in the future. Because if you look at other contracts, it seems pretty clear that if Ohtani was like, I am done pitching, I am just a hitter from now on, he would have gotten $30-35 million a year or something like that to just hit. And then there's some amount of money built into this contract because Ohtani is just, as a marketing asset, more valuable than any other player, which doesn't leave a whole lot of room for the Dodgers to be paying him as a pitcher. And so I do sort of look at his contract and wonder, like, I don't think he never comes back and pitches. I don't think that's where we are, but did the Dodgers and other teams in their bidding say, like, look, you might pitch a couple more years, but we don't think that's what your future is going to be. And that's why the money is what it is. And so I'm actually a little bit more hesitant to pay for Ohtani at this price now than I was when we did the auction.
Yeah, it's a conversation that you kind of have to sift through, because there's the fantasy implications here. There's the Ohtani legacy implications. There's what it's going to be for the Dodgers. And what I mean by that is, like, Ohtani's legacy, I bet he wants to be a starting pitcher again. Like, that wouldn't, right. I mean, what?
And he said as much, right? His team right. has been very clear. His team, like his agent and stuff like that, have been very clear. Like, he is going to be back on the mound. At least they say he is, right?
Right, of course. Now, from the Dodgers' perspective, I think they do obviously want that, but that might be we're going to insulate this guy. We're going to have him come out of the bullpen. You know, he's going to be our Ryan Helsley and our Yordan Alvarez in one player. Like, maybe that's the case. I don't know why I chose Helsley there, but maybe that's what they want. And then there's the fantasy implications of, like, unless he is a starting pitcher, I guess it's different in Fangraphs where you can just play both at once, but, like, a reliever, Ohtani, if he's a closer, he's accumulating saves and he has an elite strikeouts per nine, and we'll see if that ends up being the case. Two Tommy Johns is pretty serious. Then, like, okay, there's definite value there. But if he's just like we're going to have him come in the seventh or the eighth, and every now and then he's going to shut out opponents when we need him, there's not a lot of meat on the bone there for fantasy, at least in terms of, like, all right, I'm going to pay more for this guy who's going to be utility only just so that I can get some relief innings. And then there's this final component of, like, could he be an outfielder? If we start seeing him taking reps in the outfield, I don't take that as good news for his long-term pitching. I would take that as very bad news. So it would increase the position eligibility, which he could obviously use because he's utility only. But in terms of long-term value, again, I wouldn't take that as a good sign.
No, and I think, if he's a reliever in any format where you can use him as both, but you have to choose day to day, his relief pitching has no value, even if he's a closer, right? Because if you have a choice on a given day of, do I put, just use an example, you could put Josh Hader in as closer, or you could put Yordan Alvarez in at your util. You're putting Alvarez in at util every single time, unless it's like late in the season, you're kicking everyone's butt in offense and you need saves. But you're going to take the utility, right? Just look at ADP, right? Like, nobody is taking a closer over an elite hitter ever. In a format like Anunu, where you can play him both at the same time, that is different, because then you can leave him in your util spot and a relief pitcher spot, and get both on any given day. Now, I also think if he's going to become a reliever, it's going to be more challenging than I think a lot of people are thinking about to manage that, because he can't be your seventh inning guy, or your closer, or your ninth inning guy, or your eighth inning guy. He has to be a guy who comes in when he isn't due up, and there's no chance of him being due up, right? Because he's been a starter his whole career, so we can't assume that he can go to the pen and warm up quickly, right? There are relievers who can, like, go throw five pitches and be like, I'm good, I'm warm, let's go. I wouldn't assume that's him, which means that you need to be in a situation where you go, okay, our team is up to bat now. We're going to change pitchers when we go back to the field next inning, and he can be ready by then. And you have to be really confident his spot in the order is not coming up. Because what you don't want is he's due up sixth in the inning, and he's out in the bullpen warming up, and you load the bases with two outs, and his spot comes up.
Right.
Right. So like it's a weird scenario where he's really hard to use as a reliever. I think you almost need to be like, oh, he ended last inning. So therefore he can come in. And then you're in a position where like he ends the fifth inning. Your starter's doing okay. Do you just go to him then anyways? Because you may not be able to use him at any other point in the game. So this is it. This is your opportunity. It might be. So I'm a little, I actually would love to see a team do this because I don't know how they would handle it. And I think it'd be cool to see. But I am now a little bit more cautious in my thinking about Ohtani as a starter. I think he will be on the mound to start next season. Because I think he'll recover from whatever the surgery is. He'll want to come back. What I don't know is, will he be starting in 2026 or 2027? Or is this a short-lived thing? Is there a little bit more reason to believe that at least the Dodgers and other teams have said, we need to hedge? So we'll see. But yeah, that's how I feel about Ohtani. I think actually, if he this year, I'm fine with him at that $57 price. I think if Alvarez and Soto and those guys are going 60, I am fine with him at 57. And the fact that, you know, if he does, like, I will keep him at 69 next year to start. And if he pitches the way he used to, and it's like, oh, it turns out the injury was fine and he's still Shohei Ohtani, then I will also keep him at, you know, 61 the year after that, and 63 the year after that, and 65 the year after that, and be thrilled with this. So, yeah, it's not a bad place to be. So any other spots or players? I mean, looking at like at your roster, let's pull up your roster real quick. I'm going to see if there's anyone in your roster who jumps out at me. I think maybe the biggest question I have for you is you say that you focused on pitching. And yet you've got a lot of sort of young, risky pitchers, right? So look at your pitching. You got Luis Castillo and Max Fried are your 1 and 2. I have no issue with either of those guys. Fried's been hurt, but I'm not concerned. Jesus Luzardo at $20, same price as Fried, as your number 3. I know he was really good last year. I like Luzardo. I've been trying to trade for him in a couple places. But the history is up and down. Tanner Bibee, who's just a rookie. Hunter Brown, who looked good early last year but really faded. Gavin Williams, who I think we're still looking for a sort of a breakout from him to really earn up his value. At $11. Shane Boz at $11, who really has not done much. Chris Sale, who is Chris Sale. It's hard to know what to expect from him right now. And then you've got like Lucas Giolito, Graham Ashcraft, Christopher Sanchez. It's interesting because like you say you focused on pitching as well as outfield. And I don't mean this to attack your pitching, because I think it's more about the state of pitching in baseball than anything else. But like, this isn't like a rotation I look at and go, yep, lock solid, lockdown, top of the league rotation. There's a lot of question marks in there. Is it basically the same as what we're talking about with outfield? Is it just like pitching just has a lot of question marks in that middle bunch?
I think it's a little different than outfield, because I think in like, The hard thing I have with pitching analysis, especially before seasons even begin, is like you can look at any individual pitcher outside of the top like 8 and just be like, oh, well, here are all these problems with this pitcher. Like you could do that with almost literally any of them. I mean, who are we talking about outside of the top like 8-9 starting pitchers that we can't identify multiple problems with? So I went a little bit for depth and definitely for upside. I wanted to make sure I had enough arms to really fill it out. I did want to target one of those top, 6 to 8 to 9 names. And I got my guy in Luis Castillo, who coincidentally I got in that other mock as well. And in the one NFBC draft that I've done so far. So I guess I really like Luis Castillo this year. But otherwise I tried to just acquire enough arms, young, strong arms that I felt like I would give me a rotation throughout the year, unless somebody overspent at starting pitcher, which that's certainly not what I wanted to do. I wanted to make sure I got it. I attacked it. I felt at the end like I had a good rotation, because I guess that is what it does have in common with outfield, is that I think in these early drafts, these early auctions, it might be easy to leave a draft and be like, oh, man, I really whiffed on outfielder. I really whiffed on starting pitcher, whereas it might be harder to do at other positions. But with this, I felt like my rotation, it might not jump off the page as like, this is definitely going to be the best rotation in the league, as someone who might have overspent on it did. But I look at this rotation, I say, this could end up at the top of the league. Like, yeah, that's within the potential realm of outcomes. So I'd say I attacked it in a way where I was cognizant of the fact that it is an odd position. It's different from outfield, though, because outfield, there's just a drop off. With pitcher, once you get through those names, those early, early names, it's like, I don't know, and I'm making up this number, pitchers 21 through 64, you could like make any kind of case for, could go in any kind of order. And that's what drives me crazy about early pitching analysis, because if all we want to do is focus on the negative, then we could just trash every single pitcher and we shouldn't just draft any of them. We might as well just pick up free agents during the year and spend all your picks on hitters.
Yeah, I mean, I know. And if you look at my rotation in this league, I think somewhat similar to you, I was like, I'm not going to get, I wasn't as focused on getting one of the top like 5 to 6 guys. I just was like, I want to spend at the top of my rotation. And I did. I spent $29 on Framber Valdez, $26 on Pablo Lopez, $18 on Justin Steele. I feel really good about those guys as a 1-2-3. Bailey Ober at $5 is my 4. Gets a little more questionable. Brian Bayo at $5. I still like Bayo, but I don't know. And then I have not set this in order. So I'm reading them as my 4th and 5th. But then I've got an $11 Carlos Rodon. Is he a $25 pitcher? Is he a $0 pitcher? I have no idea.
It's one or the other.
Right. We'll find out. I've got a $5 Reed Detmers, who I think is a little bit like Bayo in that, like, young guy, a lot of talent. I really like him, but like, he might be terrible. We'll have to see. Andrew Painter for a buck, which, whatever. Then who else did I have here? Ricky Tiedemann for $3, who I was very happy with, but you know, we'll see what he can do. Trevor Rogers for $5 and Tristan McKenzie for $5.
I like those last two for sure.
I like all three of those last three, but like if you told me that I'm cutting Tiedemann, Rogers, and McKenzie at the end of May, I'm not like, what? That's crazy. Where'd you go? Like, sure, that might happen. I don't think that'll happen. If I thought that was going to happen, I wouldn't have bought them, right? Like, but it's not some crazy outcome to think that, you know, I'm rolling into June and like, I'm happy with Framber, I'm happy with Pablo Lopez, I'm happy with Steele, and Ober, Bayo, Rodon, Detmers, Tiedemann, Rogers, and McKenzie are all worthless. Like, that could totally happen. It also could be that, like, 4 of those guys are aces. It's like, I don't know what to expect. So, I think you're right. It is not, it's almost like the, you know, we talked about catcher and outfield before. It's almost like the weird child of catcher and outfield. It's like catcher has those like couple guys at the top, and then there's like 40 guys, there's like 20 guys you might like and be okay with. And then outfield has this like huge drop off, or if you don't get the top guys, you really don't know what to expect after that. And starting pitcher is sort of that mix where it's like there's top guys. And then there's a whole bunch of guys who, like outfield, you don't know what you're going to get. But like catcher, you're sort of content to have those guys. And I think I actually feel pretty good about how I handled pitching in this one. And I think it's going to be how I sort of think about pitching moving forward, is 2, 3, or 4 $20-ish to $30-ish dollar guys that I trust. And then buy upside and see what sticks. I think that's just sort of the way I'm going to have to go about it. I can't really see a better path.
Yeah, your specific 3 starting pitchers kind of baffle me. Like, Framber Valdez, I was just talking to Nick about this. Like, that dude turned into an absolute pumpkin in the second. His ERA in the second half was over 4.5. And yet, it's a $29. Like, he was more expensive than Luis Castillo. I got Luis Castillo for $28.
Yeah.
But then you somehow get Pablo Lopez for just $26, and he's a consensus top 10 starting pitcher. So like, that was really baffling to me. I do like Steele, although that is he going to be as good as he was last year? I don't know, but I do think he's an $18 minimum starting pitcher. So yeah. I like them, and I'm not as out on Framber as Nick is. That's definitely not where I was going with that. It was just the prices on those two players, especially when I compare them to Castillo, is just strange to me. Like, how did Framber get so high?
You know, he is very good in this format because he keeps the ball on the ground. Sure. And so even as that ERA went up, his points per game was, or points per inning pitched, was still pretty good because his skill set is, like, it plays up in this format for sure.
Sure.
And so I suspect that that's why. I mean, as bad as he was in the second half, he still ended up over 5 points per inning on the season. He was like, his last 10 starts, like he had a couple of bad starts in there in early August where he was like, you know, he had 3 starts at Baltimore, at Miami, and then versus Seattle, where he put up a total of about 28 points in 19 and two-thirds innings. But then his next few starts, even as the ERA stayed sort of up, he put up 45 points, 41 points, 32 points, 33 points, 43 points, 34 points. Like, he was a stud in this format for most of the rest of the season. And that includes, you know, 6 runs against Kansas City, 3 runs against Oakland. Like, he was giving up earned runs in there. He just, his skill set is such that even when he gives up runs, he's effective for this format. So I suspect that's what drove up his price. But anyways, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll finish up our thoughts on this draft and see if there's anything else worth talking about. All right, welcome back. We are finishing up our talk on this mock auction that we both participated in. And I want to talk a little bit about third base because third base is a position that you said, like, last year we were all really worried about it. I'm still sort of mixed on it this year, but, like, I walked out of this draft having spent $5 on Ke'Bryan Hayes and sort of feeling okay about that. I also spent $5 on Jake Berger, and I sort of looked at those two and was like, you know what? I bet I get a solid third baseman out of that. And I don't feel great about it, but I feel okay about it. And that's not a position where I thought last year I could have gotten away with that kind of thinking.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. It feels different this year than it did last year. Going into drafts last season, I was gravely concerned about third base, as were many. And that just proved out to not be a concern worth having. I like Jake Berger a lot, just to focus on that specific player just for a second here. He was very solid in this format. He was over 5 points per game. And he was a pretty solid asset to have. So between him and Hayes, who he himself looked like maybe something was happening there in the second half for Ke'Bryan Hayes, I kind of like that combination. I went the Josh Jung route, who, you know, before he once again got injured, he was pretty awesome. I can't remember if he was the starting all-star for the American League at third base or not. I mean, it's an irrelevant fact, even if that was the case.
Right.
But still, you know, he was good enough that he, you know, Rangers fans were excited to vote for him. So, and he's obviously a guy who was a top prospect with a lot of upside. So at $13, a little pricey. But point being, you and I both left this auction without top-tier third baseman and both feel fine. And that just was not the case last draft season.
Yeah, for sure. And Young, I mean, I, you know, he did not flash the full $13 value last year. I should say that. He flashed $13 value. He just didn't sustain it. But he was probably like an $8 to $10 guy. And there's obviously some breakout potential there. So I feel pretty good about that price for you. I think, like you said, I think it is a little bit of an overpay, but it's not an overpay for his value. It's an overpay for the baseline production you should expect from him. But there is a secondary breakout potential with him that is significant. And so I really like that. With Hayes, you know, I have harped on the fact that he had, you know, we've heard so much about how he needs to elevate the ball. He hits the ball hard, he needs to elevate the ball. And I've harped on the fact that that's not sufficient because he doesn't pull the ball when he elevates it. And so if all he did was increase his fly ball rate, he was getting a lot of fly balls the other way, and that's not that valuable. He had, in his career high pull rate on fly balls Okay, so the percentage of his fly balls that he pulled, the best month he had ever had in his career was 17.4%. I don't remember when that was. I wrote this in a tweet, and that's what I'm looking at right now. But he had never pulled more than 17.4% of his fly balls over the course of a month. In July and September of this last season, and I know I left out August in the middle, forget that. July and September of the season, he pulled 47.4% and then 34.3% of his fly balls. In addition, August, September, and May of this season were the only 3 months of his career with a fly ball rate over 40%. He had never been over 35.1% until April of this year when he went to 36.8%. And then, like I said, May, August, September, he was over 40%. So what he was doing over the course of the season was both elevating the ball more and pulling those elevated balls more. And that combination of things is the thing I've been waiting for to buy back in on Hayes. And so I'm in. And I'm probably going to buy pretty aggressively on him over this offseason. Because if he can maintain a 40-ish percent fly ball rate and pull 35% of those fly balls, he's going to be really good. I don't know if he can do that, but if people are only going to make me pay $5 to find out, I'll gladly pay that price. So we've talked about third base. There's other third basemen that are, I think, pretty good values. If I'm poking around here, it's not just these three guys, right? Like I think you can wait. You can't wait forever on third base, but there are third basemen to be had at reasonable prices. Even a guy like JD Davis went for $1, and you could probably use him as part of a platoon. Guys like Austin Riley going for like mid-30s is not a bad price considering the production that he can put up. So I don't think you have to go crazy at third base. I think you can wait a little bit. Are there other positions where you felt like you learned something from this auction? Like, we've talked about third, we've talked about catcher, we've talked about outfield, we've talked about starting pitchers. Any takeaways at middle infield or reliever, I guess? I never have takeaways at reliever.
Yeah, I'm not even going to touch that. I think 4 of my 5 relievers were guys, so I was like, all right, I'm done with this auction. Like, just give me 4 relievers. In terms of middle infield, it's actually not directly related to this specific auction because this is very specific scoring, right? This is Fangraph points, and it's a little bit different. Players like Bryson Stott, for example, are maybe not as valuable in this format as in others. But middle infield itself, and I actually want to just focus on second base because second base has long been a cesspool throughout fantasy baseball history and certainly recent history. But I think second base is actually pretty strong this year. I think there's a top four that is just excellent and can rival the top four of most positions with Mookie Betts, Ozzie Albies, Marcus Semien, and Jose Altuve. I mean, we're talking about four guys who have like MVP upside, maybe not so much Albies, but he's still very good. And I just thought, like, looking at the names as I went through this, I was like, all right, I can get a second baseman now, or I could wait because this guy's still there. Like, all right, now I'll get a second baseman. No, maybe I can wait because this guy's still there. I ended up paying $6 for Jonathan India, who, frankly, might just be broken and not good. So maybe I'm not the perfect poster person to talk about this, but I just feel like second base is deeper than it has been in years past.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I ended up, my starter is a $10 Nolan Gorman. I also have an $8 Jorge Polanco and a $9 Andreas Jimenez. And like, I feel pretty fine. Good about that group. Mm-hmm. I also had a $3 Ronnie Mauricio, who I'm very sad about.
Yeah,
but like, I felt pretty good about that. I had a harder time at shortstop where I felt that way. Like, oh, there's more guys out there. There's more guys out there. And then all of a sudden there was nobody out there. And yep. I think there were a couple things that factored into that. One is, I think the drop-off at shortstop is steeper when it happens, a little bit more like we were talking about with outfield. Mm-hmm. And I also think that people, there is still a tendency to prioritize shortstop. And so they just went earlier, and people were sort of more aggressive on them. But I ended up spending, like, I have my starting shortstop will be a $19 O'Neill Cruz, which... like, I feel okay about, but that's more than I'd want to spend on him. And it's very risky. But then behind him, I have a $4 Zach Neto, who I like. I have a $3 Vaughn Grissom, who I like. And that's sort of it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, like, I don't know. I worry about, like, if Neto's not actually good and Cruz is hurt and Grissom, his not team playing. Refuses to play him, like, I don't know what I do. And so I don't really like where I ended up there, right? That's right. I'm going to have to make a trade. Now, part of that, again, is I left a ton of money on the table here. I could have spent up for a different shortstop, but, like, I didn't feel like the shortstops were going all that cheap.
Like, well, there was one shortstop that I kind of want to throw this out to you. I know we're up against it, but there was one shortstop that went for $18 that has zero MLB experience. And so the question I wanted to ask you here, Chad, particularly because this is a topic that you and I have been discussing literally for years, you know, prospects in auctions. Of these four players in their dollar values, if you had to roster one of them, which is the one that you want? So that $18 shortstop is Jackson Holliday. We have a $36 Yamamoto. We have a $13 Wyatt Langford, who I already know that is going to be your answer. And we have a $14 Jackson Chirio. Of those four, which of those would you want, and why is it Wyatt Langford?
I guess we'll start with this. To me, among the three bats, Langford and, well, you said Holliday. I thought you took him an $18 Jackson Chirio at $18.
$18 Jackson Holliday, $14 Jackson Chirio, $13 Wyatt Langford.
So I think I like Langford better than Chirio for this format. And yep. So
agreed.
He beats out Chirio. And then given the price choice between the Langford and Holliday, I'll take the cheaper guy because I like them both, but I am risk averse on prospects and that's just too much for me.
Sure.
And so it really does come down to a question of Langford versus Yamamoto. And man, I think Yamamoto could be really good. However, here's the other prices on pitchers over $30. There's a $46 Cole, a $31 Glasnow, a $32 Gallen, a $30 Nola. Then there's Yamamoto. And there were more. Now I got to find them. Hold on. A $30 Wheeler and a $31 Burns. A $31 Gaussman. Yeah. And a $48 Strider. So there are nine pitchers, including Yamamoto. Nine pitchers, including Yamamoto, who went over $30. If I'm right, and I'm trying to remember if this is right, Strider and Cole were the only two who went over that $36, right? With everyone else Strider, I listed was less than that. That is like, that's just wrong. Like, he should not be the third highest paid pitcher in a startup league. Now, in a third, fourth year league where he might be the only big name starting pitcher out there, that may lead to weird things with his price. Fine. I get it. I will accept that. He might be a star. But at $36, he is priced in this auction. Basically, he is priced like he is a Cy Young candidate. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm ready to assume that.
Arguably better than a Cy Young candidate. Like, Justin Steele was a Cy Young candidate.
Yeah, fair enough.
At this price, Yamamoto is a top three starting pitcher.
Yeah, period. I guess what I was getting, I guess what I was getting at is that you've got Cole in the AL and Strider in the NL going in the mid-40s. And he is going to be, at this price, the second best pitcher in his league, no matter where he ends up signing. Mm-hmm. I'm out on that. it's just too high a price for a guy who, I don't know. People are like, yeah, he's dominated in Japan. It's like, yeah, he has, but like we've mostly been told that the NPB is like AAA-ish, maybe a little above AAA. So he is like he's Grayson Rodriguez, right? Like, that's a better comp for him than Strider. And if you want to say, no, he's a better prospect than Rodriguez, okay. I am here for him being a better prospect than Rodriguez, if that's the argument you want to make. I don't know that that's a given, but fine. Grayson Rodriguez went for $16 in this draft. I will easily take a $16 Grayson Rodriguez over a $36 Yamamoto. Like, easily. I would take a $20 Grayson Rodriguez over a $36 Yamamoto. I'd probably take a $20 Grayson Rodriguez over a $30 Yamamoto. So I don't get it. I think people are way out over their skis on this one. There's just this, like, people are, I don't know. And everyone's like, oh, but have you seen the Cubs? And have you seen the translated stats and blah, blah, blah? It's like, yeah, we talked about that with, like, Yusei Kikuchi. And I'm not saying that Kikuchi. Right? he is better than that. But there was all this talk about, like, Kikuchi's going to be a $20 starter. He's just, like, slow down. Let's see how he translates. I fully believe that other than Ohtani, he is the best pitcher we've seen come over, maybe ever, but certainly in a long time. That doesn't mean that he's going to be one of the three best pitchers in baseball. So,
agreed. Yeah, there's a middle ground there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, we've been going for about an hour, and we gotta wrap it up. As Pete said, he already recorded with Nick today to talk about his other drafts. This is like 3 hours of draft talk for you. That's, yeah. Right. So we'll let you get back to, you know, the rest of your life and your family and all those kinds of fun things. So, but anyways, thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you next week, and hope you enjoy your holidays.